Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, so we encourage you to go there and click on the link to the website of our guests. We'll have that website here for you in just a moment for our guest, and we encourage you to find out what they have, what more they have to offer. And go there, and I think you'll be quite surprised at some of the things that will jump out at you. And I think that it'll help you a lot. I know that just doing these interviews helps me a great deal. As a matter of fact, I've in a matter of speak jokingly said that this is my therapy, and I've been in therapy for some almost 40 years doing these interviews. So there you go. It just says that I have a lot of work that I have yet to do. But then don't we all? Don't we all? Well, this is going to be an interesting program today because we're going to be delving into some commandments and sort of a, I'll call it a constitutional mandate or edict, if you will, in the U.S. Constitution. Of course, it talks about the fact that we have the right to life and the right to liberty. However, we don't have the right to happiness. We can pursue it. We have the right to pursue happiness, but we can't have it. Although maybe our guest today will sort of open our eyes to that. And then, of course, we are going to talk about the seven commandments for happiness and prosperity with Shari Brown. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program via Skype.
Thank you and happy birthday, Richard.
Well, thank you very much. As I celebrate 56 years on the planet, which is a very brief moment in time as the universe spins and so forth. Yet it seems like a very long time as well. And we're all going through stuff. We're all experiencing different things, and we're trying to find some level of equilibrium, some level of balance, happiness. Yes, and I still joke about it, but yet I still wonder what our founding fathers meant by having the right to life and liberty. I get that. I understand, but the pursuit of happiness as opposed to the right to happiness, you know, I find that a very interesting juxtaposition. It's almost as if you can pursue it, but it'll always, it's like the carrot on a string out in front of a horse on a stick. He will never reach it, but he will chase it, thinking that he will eventually get there. And I've often thought of that in terms of, for example, God. I mean, you make your title of your book is The Seven Commandments for happiness and prosperity. And I've often thought in reference to connecting with God or the universal power, again, whatever your phrasing or your title, if you will, I always felt that the best that I could ever hope for was to get one half closer. In other words, if I'm a mile from God, I continue to grow, and now I'm only a mile and a half. I'm only a half a mile.
Half a mile.
And then a quarter of a mile, and then an eighth, then a 16th. But I never will get there because it's always cutting it in half. So I'm always, there's always this separation, you know?
Right.
And so we're going to talk about a lot of these different things in the context of this book, which basically is going to take you, the reader, on an enchanted journey through the history of religion to discover the seven key principles that can bring you happiness and riches. Now, that's interesting. The title is The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity, but the reference is made to riches. So you're using two different words for describing what a lot of people, especially in the West, most in particularly in the West, see as money, cold, hard cash. That's what they want.
Yes.
They want a bank account with 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 zeros or more.
Yes.
And then you wonder when someone has that, why it's not enough. And then here's a real irony. There was a study that just came out. Maybe you saw this report that shows that people who are wealthy live longer than those who are not. And I can kind of explain that one. I don't even need a study. How much stress is the human being on who is just trying to survive, just from day to day, paycheck to paycheck, and that kind of thing? That puts a lot of stress on the physiology of the human body. So, first of all, let's talk about why you use the concept, and I'm going to say metaphor, maybe it's not so much of a metaphor, the Seven Commandments.
Well, Richard, Seven Commandments is the consolidation of all the commandments that were sent to us through three prophets, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. There were 19 commandments, 10 commandments is Moses, 2 commandments of Jesus, 7 commandments of Muhammad. I consolidated and disposed of the redundancies. I came up with 7 commandments that basically that's what God communicates to us through his prophets. Now, happiness, I understand it's really difficult to sustain happiness in a world full of chaos. Having said that, I do believe from my own experience that if you follow the tenets and implement the 7 commandments of Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, you at best you are going to attain prosperity and happiness. At worst, you're going to come to realize that it wasn't as important as you thought, because you're going to have a serene soul and you're going to be happy. Happiness, you're going to realize that it's not about the amount of money you have, it's about how you feel in your heart. Prosperity is basically what you feel in your heart at the end, eventually. So 7 is the consolidations of the 19, 10 commandments, 2 commandments, and Muhammad's commandments, without losing anything of it.
I know that people have enough trouble as it is trying to live by the original 10 from the Old Testament, let alone the one that Jesus sort of codified all 10 down into, or two,
right.
I should say.
Yes.
And I know that the concept, especially in the literary world, but in other areas as well, of coming up with X number of steps, or in your case, commandments, or whatever it might be, the 12 steps and so on and so forth, is it gives people some kind of structure, I think. And we'll go through these, but you come from a part of the world that some have said is basically the cradle of civilization. It is the if you will, the core of where some of two of the three great religions came from.
Right.
Interestingly enough, in spite of our increased ability to access information, we still seem to be pretty darn ignorant about two of, if not all three of the major religions that we are dealing with and have been for the last 2,000 to 4,000 or more years. Because unless you were born into it, you're not going to learn about it.
Right.
There's no reason to, because the religion, if you will, that you were brought up in, that's the way. That's the only way.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your history as far as what you have grown out of that has brought you to this place.
Right. When I was raised a Muslim, even though my father was not too religious, my mother prayed, but I was basically at that time hostage of the family code, and we couldn't read Quran because it is in Arabic. Farsi of Quran is really difficult to understand because Quran itself was recited to Muhammad and he recited it, just like Homer did Ulysses. He was illiterate, however he recited. It's very complicated, and it's written in a very poetic way. I was very curious. I was always curious about religion. And it all started with the revolution, actually, and Islamic revolution, that it struck me as being wrong, the atrocity of these people who are hijacked, basically, the Islam revolution. And that caused me to study, starting from Torah. Well, I came to America, went to the Catholic college. Then I married a Jewish man from New York. So I studied all the three testaments. For years I have been studying, almost 30 years, every day. And I realized that the similarities of these three books outweighs their differences. So when I see that it's been so misunderstood, and the fact that no one really, hardly anyone, would read other books. Muslims never read the Bible. Christians never read the Quran. I've read everything, and I see that basically they all say the same thing. So I explained about that in my book. And the Seven Commandments is including Muhammad's commandments and Jesus and Moses. Very easy to follow without losing anything. Therefore, I am basically against the label, these labels they put on the religion. I think people should be divided to believers and unbelievers. For instance, in the Bible, even Jesus Christ said the sinners are going to come and kill me. Never ever mentioned Jews are going to come and kill me. It was because Bible, all these books were written hundreds of years after the prophets died. People changed them. Christianity, after Christ, they said Jews came and killed the Christ or killed Christ. I never read in Quran anywhere that says women should cover their hair, let alone their faces. I never read in Quran anywhere that said homosexuality is unredeemable. In fact, it says it's redeemable. So these things have changed. And since people don't read Quran, they don't really know. So they take the Islam the way it's been portrayed to them because of the politics. It's always been politics that ruins religion. Religion is very simple. God's message to us is very simple. And I do believe that if you forget about what's out there and sit down and read these books and understand them and implement them, that's basically what God wants us to do. Nothing more, nothing less. All the three prophets came three different times for three different people. One was for Arabs who were illiterate. One was for Jewish people in Sinai. And Christ comes and gives us the commandment of love and peace. So it's really nothing complicated about this. Therefore, after revolution and after Muslims invaded and hijacked the Islam and made such a big deal about non-Muslims, which I understand that Muslim only is a word in Arabic meaning total submission to higher power. So for these people, for instance, in my opinion, when people go to 9/11, they just put bombs and attack all the Muslims. According to Muhammad mentions in Quran that Moses is a Muslim and Jesus is a Muslim. Therefore, people who attacked 9/11, even by their own book, people who were victims in 9/11, all the victims that have been beheaded are the martyrs, even according to their own Quran. But since they brainwash the children from the child from age 5 or 7 in Muslims, and they can't really understand, they believe what they hear and what they're taught by the religious leader, which is none of which is true. Mm-hmm. Never ever in Quran, the word jihad has been so misunderstood, because if you notice all of the killings in the Bible during Moses, during King David, Muhammad, has been for to eliminate the non-believers. It never says that go and kill Muslims, even during crusades. You kill Muslims or you kill Christians. They're all believing in one God. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what these people are doing, they are misrepresenting the religion Islam. And we are somehow bound to think that everything these people do has anything to do with Quran. It is so not any of these actions that this, for instance, ISIS is doing, has nothing to do with what Quran teaches us to do. Nothing.
I remember hearing, and I've never read the Quran, although I have to say that I saw a report, or not a report, I saw a story, and I actually looked into this. There is a new version of the Quran that took 10 years to put together.
Right.
And it was put together by several Quranic, if that's the right term, scholars, if you will.
Right.
And the effort that was put forth, the intent of the effort, was to basically correct, as you are talking about, some of the misinformation or disinformation that's being spread by the various extremist groups and individuals. But I remember hearing a quote from the Quran, and of course I can only paraphrase it, where Muhammad, it is said that he said, protect the people of the book, which referred to the Christians.
Right, and Jews. He called Jews.
And the Jews would make sense because they followed, of course, the Torah. The Old Testament,
yes,
yeah.
They believe in one God.
Yeah.
Everything is basically Muhammad's philosophy of believing in one God. Now, because people misunderstood it, then these prophets came and clarified it with their commandments, with their books, with their message, Moses with the Ten Commandments and the tablets. None of these is different than the other. It's people who made it different. There are people,
yes,
who wanted to call Christianity. Jesus was a Jewish. His last supper was a Passover.
Exactly.
So.
I have to say that even I, growing up here in the West, I was born and raised Roman Catholic, and have also been exposed to the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church. But even as you've just expressed, and I have known this for decades, that when you think about it, if you are going to be a follower of Jesus, you should actually be a Jew, because
right,
he was Jewish.
He was Jewish.
Not a Christian.
Exactly.
And he wasn't even the first Christian.
And basically, yes, exactly. Basically, Muhammad learned about God, one God, when he was trading. And he learned it from Christians and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to Arabs who were worshiping idols and taught them about believing in one God. And the word Islam means having submission, total submission to the higher power in Arabic. He was an Arab. He said it in Arabic. Now, for them to say that Islam is something different and he's against it. And you know, another thing that surprises me is the fact that when I was in Iran, after I finished school, I went to college here, I went to Iran during the revolution. I was in Iran, and when they were chanting "Mark to America, death to America, death to America," I'm thinking America didn't even exist during Muhammad or Quran.
Mm-hmm.
These books have been written so hundreds of years after these prophets. So whoever, yes.
I was going to say, let me ask you, in regards to the Quran, and this has to do with the story that I read, and I think I even downloaded the digital version of this study Quran that I was referring to earlier, that it has been put together in an effort to not only demystify, but also to debunk a lot of the misinformation, that just as the Bible, if we were able to read it in the original Aramaic, the Quran moves between metaphor, allegory, reality, storytelling. I mean, in other words, no more, the Bible is no more a literal document or story.
Right.
The Quran is that correct, that the Quran is in the same context, that it shifts back and forth?
Well, when these books were written, there was no print. So every time that one person wanted to copy, they had to do it by hand. So if one person couldn't understand the prior person's handwriting, they would improvise. Mm-hmm. So this improvisation came until one person named, I believe his first name was William Hill. 30 years he studied all of these documents, and he made, when printing was invented, he read all of these and he made a printable copy, which in that case he probably improvised some of the things he didn't know. Mm-hmm. So we really can't fully trust, other than the fact that we have to trust ourselves and understand what it really means, because there is so many discrepancy in the Bible that one would think that, okay, people wrote those, prophets didn't write. So my seven commandments is basically upon what Moses said in Ten Commandments, what Jesus said in his parables, and what he meant, and what Muhammad really meant. None of these other things that they come up with and they pretend and they profess and they teach these people, in, for instance, terrorists, to these people, to these kids, not one person ever teaches them that when you behead someone, you're the attacker and the person who is beheaded, according to their own Quran and Jihad. Mm-hmm. Which I think jihad should be obsolete by now, the word, because there is no non-believers. Almost everyone believes in one God. So when they attack Twin Towers and kill all the Muslims, according to Quran, they were Muslims because they believed in one God. Mm-hmm. So they, martyrs, are the ones who got killed, not the ones who attack.
Mm. Well, I want to continue this in the context of course, your work. I know that people are listening going, well, what in the world does this have to do with happiness and prosperity? Because there's not a lot of happiness and prosperity that's being conversed about on the program just yet. But
right.
We do have to lay down this a bit of a foundation. There's an interesting quote I heard many years ago that goes basically like this, that truth is truth until it is written down.
Right.
And that the moment it is put down on paper, as it were,
right,
that's when it's no longer truth.
Right.
And those are the kinds of things that we're kind of facing right now in terms of better understanding, where we're, where we're coming from and where we're going. And I guess that's the next big thing is trying to figure out where we're going next. Well, where we're going to go next is to a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to continue talking with you. And it's Shari,
yes.
Sharifi, correct?
Brown, yes.
Shari Sharifi Brown.
Sharifi is my maiden name and Brown is my husband's name.
Sharifi.
My marriage.
Well,
yes.
I thank you so much for sharing with us here on the program. We're going to continue talking more with Shari here on AM 1290, and we're going to talk more with her here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we want you to stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We're here with Shari Sharifi Brown. She is the author of The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity. And she comes to us, she is in the States, but she comes to us originally, if you will, from... Now, how many people know where Persia is? The part of
more
the world...
More people know that before. When I started college here in 1967, hardly anyone knew about Iran. But... starting 1979 revolution, that's when actually I became more interested about religion, because it struck me as being wrong when they started executing people that have no, they were just threat to them. So I really never thought of Khomeini being Muslim at all, because a Muslim does not just kill people. Muhammad says in the Quran, if somebody attacks you, this is the definition of jihad in Quran. If somebody attacks you because you believe in me, and you defend yourself, in the means of defending yourself, you get killed, you go to heaven. Therefore, these people didn't even have these people that they're killing and they're beheading and they're bombing. None of them had even a chance to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. So totally these people have nothing to do with religion. They are using the name of Islam. They're taking advantage of the fact that not too many people read the Quran, because two-thirds of Quran basically is about Muhammad, about Moses and Jesus anyway.
Now, let me ask you a quick question here in that regard, because it seems to me like, and I kind of thought about this a few years back, and this was shortly after, maybe a year or two after the 2001 attack. A lot of people are all bent out of shape, and boy, they just want to go to war, and they want to do this, that, and the other thing. Well, the Christians had the Crusades in the 1400s, 1500s.
Right.
And I kind of half jokingly said, well, I guess it's the Muslims' turn.
Yeah. You know?
But I want to ask you in terms of the terminology, because that's really important. I mean, you talked about how you said the word jihad is sort of an archaic. You would have thought it would have died out of use, but it has not. But I'm curious, the difference between someone who is a follower of Islam versus a Muslim. Those two different terms, and which is accurate in describing someone who is genuinely, truly trying to follow the teachings of Muhammad in the Quran?
Well, the teachings of Muhammad cannot be completed if you're not following Moses and Jesus.
So the Baha'is, who came along in the 1800s, Baha'u'llah made the comment that if you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. And if you reject one of them, you reject them all.
That's right. I believe that. But the only problem with Muhammad, with Abdul Wahab was
Baha'u'llah.
Baha'u'llah was the fact that he didn't have a book to that. The prophet is the messenger of God. He talks to God, and like Moses, he writes the Ten Commandments. Jesus was basically channeling God. I mean, Muhammad was basically channeling God. Mm-hmm. So Baha'u'llah's philosophy was good, but he didn't have a book. Therefore, he wasn't accepted, according to Muslims, as being a prophet. However, I think the reason why he has so many followers, and I went to Haifa, was very impressed by his grave, is because he was an enlightened man and he believed in all prophets.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a prophet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually was a Baha'i for about a year and a half in the 1990s. I was just taken by the philosophy of the faith, and especially, I mean, you had the privilege of going to Haifa, Israel, and actually not only visiting his grave, but also, I'm sure, going to the Hall of Justice, something along those lines.
Right.
I'm not remembering everything these days.
Yes.
But I was so taken. I mean, we would go to the what they call firesides in back in Phoenix, where we would get together and share and so forth. And of course, I don't want to muddle the waters here too much with another philosophy per se. But what I found interesting, and again, something that I have basically stated for decades, is that no philosophy or religion or belief system is created out of a vacuum. That it's a progression.
Exactly. You know? And religion changes by time because whatever laws and regulations Moses had for his followers in Sinai, for instance, if Passover dinner you throw away your leftovers, was because there was no refrigeration in Sinai and they would be spoiled. So everything that prophets say, it was for a reason. Therefore, now, after death of Muhammad, after all these years, there are certain things that we could modify according to our time. For instance, if we have ultrasounds that tells us the child is going to become, if you have the child is going to be mentally retarded or missing one hand, or my opinion is they have to make those kind of abortions legal, because there is really nothing holy about having three lives would be ruined, the parents and the child. But that's another controversial issue. That's my own opinion. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that God wanted all of us, his human beings, to be happy. And that's why he sent guidance. And I believe that if we follow the tenets of the seven commandments and implement them, then we can actualize all our hopes and desires and be happy. There is no way. I have experienced this, and I wish other people would experience it. It's not difficult to follow the seven commandments. There are people who do live a righteous life, and they say, okay, we have to. But God says that over and over in all three books, he wants to be recognized and appreciated. Prayer is because of that. He wants us to pray because he wants to be recognized. He wants us to recognize that he is the supreme power, and there is no one else but him. And if you can't worship idols, that's basically his message. And the seven commandments, the most important of all, of course, is to believe in the fact that there is only one God, and where Abraham believed. Mm. Like Kabe and Micah had over 300 idols. Mm. And then the Jews overtook it. After that, Christians overtook it. Now it's under the authority of Muslims. It's not like the Kaaba, Mecca is just a holy place that they just put a tent around it. There's nothing in it. It's just a holy place that everybody should do their worship there. The pilgrimage that Muhammad says, it's once a year. There are the prayers that Muhammad says five times a day. In Quran says, if you don't do Shabbat, which Moses and Jesus said, then you do five times prayers. At the end of Quran, it says, if you work hard every day, you don't have to pray every day. You pray it, you do your prayers at night. So we conclude that, I conclude that he wants us to pray to him. He wants us to verbalize our needs. And if we have deep faith that he is going to be on our side, there is no way we fail. At best, we're going to become prosperous. At worst, we're going to realize that it's really not, we don't really want to have that yacht or that the money that we desire. There is nothing wrong. There's nothing to fear. To just follow the commandments and notice, you know, you have to talk, you have to verbalize your prayers to mm-hmm. God.
Yeah. So when we talk about happiness, and again, it's kind of an interesting sort of juxtaposition for some folks. When we're talking about happiness, there are still many different definitions of what, you know, what that really is, what that means, you know, because what about having joy? What about having bliss? Those are two words that are often used in right. many cases, maybe in the same context, saying trying right. to say the same thing. Why happiness versus maybe those other two or some other descriptive word, or does that matter? So define it for us.
It doesn't matter. I think that if you have faith in your heart, which is the eye of your heart, that if you follow God's commandments or how he communicated to us and the rules that he put for us, we will ultimately feel happy in our heart because he is so powerful, ultimate power. If you have faith, you have to know that you have someone like God with all that power backing you up. You'll never get upset if life goes down. Life changes, you know. I went through the revolution in Iran. Everything changes from day to day. So the main point is not to lose faith in God, to be sure that he is going to help you. If something bad happens to you, you should not have a shaky faith to lose your faith in God. You should know and have faith that this is happening for a better reason. And you will see, I have experienced that, you will see that this is truth. He does things for a reason. It is in Quran a whole section about how God taught Moses about patience. If something happens to you, have patience, but have faith that was done for a reason and something better is going to happen. Most often you see people, as soon as a calamity hits them, they lose their faith in God. You cannot have a shaky faith. You have to have faith all the way. And then you'll see after a while, you would experience the happiness. You would feel happy in your heart. You would realize that you didn't really need that car or that house after all, because you have God behind you. And this is the essence of the whole thing. And the basic premise is to believe in God, to stay steadfast in the faith to God, and not get upset for a blow of faith here and then, because ultimately you have the most powerful being in the world is backing you up. You have to have faith in that, or it's not going to work. Faith is very important. Faith decides your fate. That's what I think. If you have faith and you're happy in your heart that, okay, this happened to me because some reason, maybe God had another plan for me, you will see. Miracles happen to people who notice them. You notice miracles, the more you notice them, the more they happen to you. The more they happen to you, the more your belief becomes stronger.
Well, I'm curious, too, in regards to the seven commandments, which I'm looking at now, where does this coming from you, number one,
yes,
an Iranian, number two, and probably more significant for some folks, a woman? That has to, I guess my question is, how does that play for you in so to speak, mixed company when you're talking about these things? Do others of similar beliefs, because my experience has been that no two people have, even though they may be in the same religion,
right,
they do not have exactly the same beliefs. I've found that time and time again in Christianity.
Right. But, you know, Richard, if you look at the Seven Commandments, and if you look at all these three books that were sent to us by these prophets, you have to realize that these books have been written by people. They have changed through the years, and everyone, for some reason or other, wanted to change it the way they thought that's the right way. Mm-hmm. That's why, for me, the only things that I take from these books is the Ten Commandments of Moses, the commandments of Jesus, which is basically summarizing the Ten Commandments. If you love your neighbor and your enemy, mm-hmm, you're not going to cheat him, you're not going to steal from him.
Exactly.
So basically the rest of the things are not, you have to use your own judgment.
Right.
Why Paul changed that to this? Why?
Right.
Because they wanted to have Christianity. The Antioch, for instance, Church of Antioch was a place where where Jews used to gather for meeting. Then they made it a Church of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Christ never really intended to have a different religion, nor did Muhammad. In fact, Muhammad mentions the fact that I'm not bringing a new religion. It's the same religion of Moses and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions it in Quran. But most often, unfortunately, you see that it's been ignored. What Muhammad says in Quran is totally been ignored. I have never read in Quran anywhere where it says a woman should cover their hair. Or it says modestly, just like Old Testament, dress modestly, but not to cover your face or your hair or cutting your hand. None of this is in Quran. None of this.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, because within Christianity, I think, and the powers that be, as they have over the centuries, you keep the people ignorant and you can tell them whatever you want.
Yes.
I remember a prime example that I remember reading about. There was a time when all of the sudden the sky began to darken and there were no clouds. Mm-hmm. And of course, the powers that be, the rulers, the leaders came out and said, well, God is angry because you haven't given enough alms.
So give
more alms and God will brighten the skies again. And of course they did. And the skies brightened. But it had nothing to do with the alms. It was an eclipse.
That's right. So look at what in the history, what Amenhotep, who was married to Nefertiti, and they had all these girls, what they did, they said that, okay, God can only talk to us, and then we talk to you. This is all about power.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to monopolize the power of God and the message. They would stand in front of the sun. He called himself Son of God, and he gave his people what he thought God told him, which is probably just demonstrating his own power over people. That wasn't true. I mean, God would be in every human being's heart. You don't have to go to religious leaders, or you want to, that's fine, but you don't have to go definitely to religious leaders if you read and understand the three scriptures and the essence of the three scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really read some of these objectively.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of discrepancies that makes you,
sure,
and then when you read it, it's nothing that came from Moses or Jesus or Muhammad that has discrepancies. It's after they were written, they've been changed.
Now, you've, of course, elaborated on each of the seven commandments, but I'm going to just go through the commandments themselves. Believe in only God and pray. Then ward off the evil. Ward off the evil.
Yes.
Do not worship money, possessions, power, or any idol. And of course, that kind of also elucidates on why you have prosperity in there as well, and the definition thereof. Believe in the hereafter. Repent, because there will be reward and punishment after life. Then you also have love, as you've already stated, love your neighbor. Don't steal, murder, cheat, or lie. Don't get angry. Forgive your enemy. And let's see here. Leave punishment to God. Be a charitable giver. If you didn't have the money, inconvenience yourself.
And give it your time.
Exactly. And then the seventh commandment is pray continuously. Be always in a prayer mode. And I like that because it reminds me of something that I refer to him as my mentor. I never met the man, but I've read about him, Paramahansa Yogananda. And in his book, he talks about, I believe it was Teresa of Avila, I believe it was, who said that God is among the pots and the pans. So you can pray anywhere. It doesn't have to be in a church. It doesn't have to be in a closet. I mean, you hear that. That's more of a metaphor.
That's right.
But you can literally be in a prayerful state at all times.
At all times.
Let me ask you about the hereafter. Let me ask you about the next life, if you will. Now, we certainly have heard enumerated and elucidated time and time again, specifically. And I don't want this is meant as no disrespect to believers, but we hear time and time again about this whole aspect of dying as a martyr and then going to heaven and getting 72 virgins. First of all, I find I'm just curious if you can elucidate on it, how accurate or inaccurate, but why 72 and why virgins?
Well, when it comes to the numbers, actually, an Egyptian doctor who, I'm not sure if you heard about him or not, Rashid Khan, he wrote a book about numerology of the Quran and how Quran is based, the structure of Quran is based on number 19. Mm-hmm. That's a subject of another, because I did study a lot about numerology.
Okay.
But all of these virgins and people, you have silk couches, these are our similitude. Like if you... These are the things that you enjoy in this life. They want to say you're going to have the same kind of joy in the other life. It's really not physically or literally a silk couch or 72 virgins, but you're going to have when you get there, you have such a serene life that if whatever you would like in your heart, the reason why they wrote the Quran, they wrote seven virgins, is because at that time when men could have married so many, seven virgins was a big deal for them. So he's saying that he's describing happiness and joy in the afterlife.
So there is another example, as we find many times in the Bible, another example of where it's a metaphor. It is elucidating a concept or principle.
Right.
It's not meant to be taken literally.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay. Let me ask you also about spirituality. Now, we've just referred to prayer, which is part of an individual's spiritual life. And again, this is totally separate from religion.
Right.
Talk to me about... Because I think you can only address it from your perspective, your spirituality.
Yes. There is flesh, which is the form we occupy, the body we occupy while we are on this earth. Then there is our soul, and then there is a spirit. Spirit comes from God. We all are part of the spirits of God that became souls on this earth, and we formed to our flesh, it's spirit, soul, and flesh. So you, in order for you to become closer to God, you have to transcend this world and get to the point of spirituality, which connects you to God. We are on branches now. if you want to become more spiritual, you go to the trunk to get to God. You go to the main root of spirit. Spirit comes from God. Everybody has spirit. And everybody could become spiritual. You are spiritual. You just have to find it. You have to open your heart to God so His Spirit would take you over. And then you would feel serene and you would feel that you are really doing what God wants. You would see it. You would experience it. It's not something that you just go to school and learn how to do it. You have to have that kind of faith to transcend your body, to your soul, to your spirit. That's when you become enlightened and see God.
We're talking with Sheree Brown, and she is originally from Iran, and no question about it, Ashari. It's a controversial subject. It's a controversial place, especially for Americans to talk about. And yet, at the same time, I have to wonder if over the decades, if not centuries, if especially in the 20th and 21st centuries, we haven't sort of stirred the pot. And made things worse. I've often wondered how things would be today if we had just left the region alone. Let the peoples of that part of the world work it out.
Exactly. It breaks my heart when I see that our young people lose their hands and legs and for nothing. Because it's really all of this effort, our political effort is futile. Islam has nothing to do with it. It's all about the land and money and power and oil. It really hasn't. These people go to war for the country. They fight. They get killed. They get beheaded. And for what? For what? I was during the 7 years of Iran-Iraq war, I was in Iran. They didn't even know what they were fighting for. They were getting killed, they were getting maimed, they were getting killed, they were getting maimed, and for nothing, for no reason at all. Unfortunately, no one really wants to study about what it is that they're fighting for. No one.
Matter of fact, I've put that question forth on a number of occasions. Even though I disagree with their methods, I'd like to know what it is they're so unhappy about. You know, why? I mean, is it just in general they just hate the West?
Or the hatred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
is it the
twisting of the Quran's message that has fervor that has created the fervor and the hatred?
No, I think these people. I know for a fact that Khomeini had a personal hatred towards Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody has to tell these people that when Islam was, there was no America. From day one, Khomeini, when he was young, he was saying that America is the great Satan. I had heard that his father was hanged and was executed by Shah's father because he was against America. Khomeini gets exiled because he was saying that Shah is the puppet of America. Now for us to be so unwise not to know that the very reason that he was exiled was for his hatred for American. It was totally personal agenda. He was hating. He never heard it that he was hating Americans. Death to America, death to America. For what? It's just personal. He said that, and it was all about oil, that Shah is the puppet of Americans. And why would we spend $6.5 billion, Carter spent, and people don't know that, to overthrow Shah, which we gave him, we built a military base for ourselves in the border of Russia at that time. We sold them armed forces. And then we take the country and give it to somebody who was exiled to begin with for being enemy of America. I don't really know why we make mistakes like that. Don't you think that if we're going to spend that kind of money and give so much casualty and dead people, the first thing we should know is why this person was exiled to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think if he was anti-America, when you put him in power, he's going to become your puppet? He didn't like the Shah because he said he was the puppet of America.
Mm.
So what makes you bring this guy? What makes us overthrow these so-called dictators when they really were our allies and at least they were holding ISIS back?
Yeah.
Now we open the road for ISIS to come to this country. They would have never dared to do that. Now, for us to interfere and go to these countries when we have, because of the lack of knowledge we have about the culture of these people, we don't know. I personally don't think that people in Egypt or Libya, they're ready for democracy. These people have to have a dictator because of the way it is. We can't do it. We have to implement it slowly.
Yeah.
And then we have to have a plan who to put in their place, but not overthrow the guy and not know who are we going to be to put in their place.
Exactly.
That's a mistake.
Well, I often find it interesting, too, how everybody praises Ronald Reagan for his bringing down the Soviet Union. But there's one problem, and that is that this country, for some reason, requires an enemy. We have to have somebody that we're against at all times. So you get rid of the Soviets. Who are you going to replace them with? Well, guess who's ripe and ready for the picking, so to speak. And so what do? We exacerbate it. And again, I'm no statesman or diplomat. But it just seems kind of unusual and very strange. And of course, we've kind of gotten off on a bit of a tangent, but I think it still applies to what we're talking about.
I think so. I think that it's really wrong for us to interfere with the inner country problems that they have, because there is a reason why they need a dictator. We see time and again what happens when you let these people free. They don't have the knowledge. They are very premature and primitive to have power over them. They can't. Look at the chaos we have in Egypt, in Libya, in everywhere. We take someone, you put someone in their place that is our allies.
Yeah.
We put Maliki in Egypt because we thought he was our allies, but then he got a better offer from al-Baghdadi and he just turned on us.
Yeah.
You know, I really think we should do more homework before we attack these countries.
It would be helpful. I think it would save a lot of lives.
That's
but
right.
We're not, of course, advocating anything in particular. We're kind of musing here, just trying to understand a little bit better.
I talked about the politics.
No, that's all right. I also, before we let you go, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time with us. I know that you have a busy schedule and need to
thank
get back
you
to what
so
you're doing.
Thank you so much, Richard.
But
thank
we have, I have three more questions that I'd like to ask you. And before we let you go, should you ever find yourself back in the western part of the United States, here in Santa Barbara, California, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation.
Sure, I would love to.
But before we let you go, Sharifi Brown, my three questions are, who is Shari Brown?
Well, I came at age 17. I came to America. I went to Catholic school. I came to America to pursue my studying. My grandfather was the tutor of the old dynasty of the Shah of Hakam of Qajar dynasty. So my family was very adamant about education. I went to a Catholic school. Then I studied engineering. I went back to Iran during the revolution. I saw revolution firsthand and what happened and why, and the fact that I realized Khomeini didn't even know. He was just following what they told him. We bring you in, you do this. I have a lot of information firsthand about how and why this all happened. And that is why it breaks my heart when I see people, young people, our young people are getting, losing their feet or their legs or
their minds.
Minds. And yes, it's really a big pressure on these young kids. So I studied, and when I was an engineer, I was working for Ralph Parsons in America. After my engineering school was finished, I got recruited. I was working for Ralph Parsons on the Shah's project, for underground project of the Shah. Then I went to Iran for a while. I worked on, again, Shah's project. I worked for military, for Persian Department of Defense, and worked on missile project with Hughes Aircraft, believe it or not. So everything was fine at that time because Iran was our allies, and it's basically our military base we built. What happened after that, without Carter comes and without even studying, he takes the country and gives it to the enemy. And that's why everything, Mujahideen started from when Khomeini came, Mujahideen turned to Muslim Brotherhood, Mujahideen turned to Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda turned to Muslim Brotherhood, and now we have ISIS. These are all related to Al-Zawahiri, which is head of Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden was not head of Al-Qaeda, never was. He was a front for Al-Zawahiri. We had Al-Zawahiri in prison after Anwar Sadat died. He was a young doctor, and he kept saying CIA killed Anwar Sadat. Now, I'm not sure why we would let a person like that, who is so active politically and he's smart, come out. He goes and recruits some charismatic, rich person like Osama, puts him in front, and then yet we still don't know that he is the boss. Instead of killing him, that's why Al-Qaeda still exists, because Al-Zawahiri is alive.
Well, let me ask you my next question. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, as far as the politics, I wish that we would stay out of Middle East and let them decide what they want to do. After all, they have a product that's oil, and we have the money. They have to sell the product. They can just sit on it. So for us to just keep sending troops, we either had to do it in the beginning. We had to go and take charge and kill all of these terrorists. Now it's too late, I think, Richard. I think we have really opened a can of worms that's really difficult for anybody. We keep blaming the presidents for ISIS, but we forget to see that how did they come to be. What I want to achieve is the fact that people would have better understanding of all the three religions and how the similarity of these three religions outweighs the differences. And even the differences is because of the time has changed. So if you really believe in one God and study what he's communicating to you through his prophets, at least you have serenity in your own heart. And then politics is a different story. That's really not my concern. But I, as an Iranian, I don't think that, as an Iranian born, I'm an American. I don't think that we should be dealing with these people, because when people are ready to die, which I don't think they actually knew why they're dying, mm-hmm. they don't know what martyrism is. As I told you, in my opinion, everybody who was beheaded is a martyr,
yeah.
according to the Quran. These people are really hard to beat. Mm-hmm. You know, the only way would have been if 30 years ago we stopped the whole creation of Mujahideen. After Mujahideen came Al-Qaeda. You know, we should have stopped. Now it's kind of late, and I'm nobody to even express any opinion about this. I'm hoping that each individual becomes closer to God in his heart and finds happiness within themselves mm-hmm. and the relation they have with God.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To get my message to people, to help other people who were like me searching for right versus wrong, to best understand, to better understand what is it that makes one person righteous and what is it that makes another person unrighteous. I hope to teach people and help people to understand, have a better understanding about religion and God and Muslims, for that matter. This Islam has been hijacked. There is no Islam right now. None of these people are Muslim that they call themselves Islam. Mm-hmm. All of these fights in the history has been over power and greed. Has nothing to do with God. Mm-hmm. None of them has anything to do with God. Look what Christians did to Christians 100 years after Christ died.
Yeah.
Do you think that was Christian-like to do such an atrocity?
There's no question. It's a paradox, to say the very least, that they will have to deal with and answer for in eternity. Shari Sharifi Brown, thank you so much for sharing your time and your story, as well as the Seven Commandments for happiness and prosperity. And we wish you much success in your efforts to get out your message, and hopefully that this is a program that will help folks to do that and understand better. What email, or I should say, what web address should people go to find out more about you, about your work, and about your book?
I have sevencommandments.com about my book.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sevencommandments.com. I have a Twitter account, which is 7 Sherry at 7 COMM book.
Okay. But 7commandments.com is the website where people can learn more about you, about your work, about your book. And we thank you so much for sharing your time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was very nice meeting you.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.